How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio. It is August 17, 2015, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Go Home Raw in Minneapolis to talk about here. SummerSlam. Dave Brown is retiring. We got new UFC matches. Dave, there's always stuff going on.
Yes, there's always stuff going on. I liked the show tonight, though. I thought that there was nothing particularly bad, and John Cena and Paul Heyman were really, really good. Actually, I think they were great.
Yeah, but you know what?
What?
My shark cage idea.
Yes.
Was better than what they did in the main event segment.
I think so. I mean, something. I think it would have been more dramatic. I mean, what they did, they went to the standby, which is, we're in the guy's hometown, so it's easy heat, you know. So that was the mentality behind it.
Easy heat from a babyface. Unless Undertaker's turned and I've missed it somewhere.
Well, believe me, they knew what they were doing and they knew what the reaction would be. I don't know if they knew it would be as strong because Undertaker's
kind
of a legend.
They had to know that.
But they knew that. No, they knew he was going to get booed, though. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt of that. So it's not like they did something and got something that they didn't expect. Like when they put the women in the last match, they didn't expect that. But Undertaker, the Undertaker Brock thing, I think went exactly like they expected. So yeah, it's interesting because I wonder what's going to happen in New York because I just don't see either of them getting booed in New York. But one of them is the fans are probably going to choose one of them, and I'm thinking it'd be Undertaker. But I don't know. I mean, Lesnar's the hottest guy in the promotion, but Undertaker's the all-time legend. So, and it's New York. New York audiences are they're not the easiest to predict in situations like this. So, when it's not really a New York audience. Well, you know, it is. It's going to be largely a New York audience. I mean, there's going to be a lot of travelers for this one, but I would say this isn't going to be like of those 13,000 people. I seriously doubt that more than a couple thousand are going to be from outside the New York area. I mean, it's going to be a local show. I think they did. I think they've done a real strong job in building it, and it feels like the SummerSlam card itself, as far as you know, the other matches, they're kind of there. They're not bad. Most of them should be very good in execution. But I think the main event feels strong. You know, like very, very strong. So. I think there's a good deal of interest. And so now we got to figure out the finish, which, you know, I think that you got to do a clean finish there. Cena and Rollins watching that. Sure didn't think that Rollins was going to win, but that could be a swerve.
Well, Rollins is not getting a statue. So I think either they do a disputed finish or Sheamus leaves as champion.
It could happen. You know, that absolutely could happen. That would be really uncool, though, for Cena's 16th win to be... Well, the 17th win would probably be the big one anyway, but
well, I'm not saying that Cena has to win. He could very easily do the Seth Rollins deal and cash in during the match, just like Seth did at Mania.
Okay,
and so neither man technically wins the championship. Sheamus wins it.
You're right. They could do that. They could do that one. And then you got Randy Orton in the mix, because if that's going to happen, Randy Orton probably beat Sheamus.
Yep. Exactly like they did at Mania, actually.
Just because they did that at Mania. I don't think they're going to have Sheamus run in during the match. I mean, they could, because it's not, you know, it's not the main event. I am more likely to feel that, but we'll see. We'll see. They could do that. They could do either of those, yeah. They could have Sheamus win. And then what, Cena retains?
Cena would still be the U.S. champion.
Okay. And then, that's a step backwards, though. I mean, it's like, I'm not saying they won't do it, but I think that's a big mistake because I think Sheamus in that spot is a big step backwards from Seth Rollins in that spot.
Well, yeah, but he's a Money in the Bank guy. So they, in their minds, it's not a step back. Otherwise, they wouldn't have given him the briefcase.
I think it's a step back. I don't think that...
I wouldn't have given him the briefcase, but they did. So
well, they got to give somebody the
they
briefcase.
They see him differently than we do, is all I'm saying. I just don't think they're wasting the 16th championship win with 1 week build for that fact. I don't think that Seth is getting a trophy or a statue. So I think that either it's a disputed finish and we don't have anybody leaving with both belts, or Sheamus leaves with the belt.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake. Sheamus leaving anyway. Disputed finish should be okay, depending on how it's done.
Well, they can do anything because they've got the main event afterwards, and
yeah,
I'm pretty sure. I mean, just judging from how they do it and what makes the most sense leading to Mania, since Undertaker laid him out here on Raw, Brock is probably winning, and then that sets up Undertaker getting one last chance in Texas in his last match, and he gets the big win there. I mean, they've been playing up forever that he can't beat this guy, and it's the one thing that he wants to do before he's done. Doesn't make any sense in the story for him to win on Sunday. I mean, that kills the story dead.
Yep, and I can't see anyone else for Lesnar because, you know, I mean, I don't see Cena and Lesnar again, and who else would there be? I think Orton and Lesnar is just not strong enough for Mania for Lesnar.
Especially that Mania.
Yeah. I mean, they could do Lesnar and Reigns, you know, but I think Reigns is going to be groomed for the WWE title. It may not go that way at the end, but I think that they're going to start that push, you know, after, probably November or December, they'll try to reboot it, figuring that, well, we don't have Daniel Bryan this year to screw it up. With no real sentimental other favorite, it's still you know, you don't know what's going to happen. It still could be a tough thing. Like, that's why I don't like necessarily know that he's going to win, even if they think he's going to win.
So the show opened up with Hunter and Stephanie coming out, and they played promoter, hyping up all the matches at Mania. Noted that Brock was here tonight in Minnesota for the face to face, which of course got a big pop. John Cena had been cleared to wrestle Seth Rollins, winner-take-all match. They were going to do their contract signing tonight, and they announced that John Stewart is going to be the special host of SummerSlam. And for the record, they were babyfaces this evening, for those of you that are keeping track.
And Brock Lesnar is going to be all over. It's going to be all over ESPN tomorrow.
Yeah, they've got John Cena on the Today Show or whatever. They've got Lesnar on ESPN tomorrow. SportsCenter is going to be doing a morning and evening broadcast from outside the Barclays Center on Sunday. So yeah, they're all over ESPN this week.
I think that's a real coup for them.
That is.
We've talked about it before. I know I wrote about it a couple weeks ago in the newsletter and everything, but it's, that's a big move for them because it sets a precedent, and that probably would mean that going forward, at least the big three, or if not Mania and SummerSlam would be treated like they're like legitimate events, which is, you know, again, that it's at, you know, that's very, you know, they're very much, what's the word I'm looking for? Barometers of what's important. They lead the path as opposed to follow. So if the leaders are telling you, these sports leaders are telling you that this is legitimate entertainment, it becomes bigger to everybody else. So I think that's a hell of a coup.
And also in regards to the main event, they are calling it a match too big for WrestleMania.
Which is weird, because if it goes the way you say, it's going to be in WrestleMania.
It'll be WrestleMania, that's right. Well, it's too big right now, but it's going to be even bigger next time, so now it's big enough for Mania. I don't know.
It's too big for WrestleMania, because WrestleMania's not in August.
Hey, listen. There have been a million wrestling promotions, and I'm mostly pointing at TNA, that have tried to tell us that something is important, but they never showed us. And if they're going to try and claim that this is the WrestleMania of the summer, and they're going to try to redo this thing as the big must-see event every year, that SummerSlam's always been one of the big four, but sometimes it's kind of just a show. I mean, they're trying to make this the second WrestleMania. And
well, they've been trying to do that for years.
Doing it here. They've got a WrestleMania caliber main event. They're pushing it as a WrestleMania caliber show. It's 4 hours. They've got ESPN. They've got Jon Stewart. They're doing what you need to do if you want to convince people that this is your WrestleMania of the summer. So good for them.
Yep. And they opened the show with no bullshit. They opened the show just going like, this is our card, guys. This is our frickin' card.
That's right.
Yeah. So it was like an event center, except they were standing in the middle of the ring.
Yes, they were. So the first match was Cesaro and Randy Orton against Kevin Owens and Sheamus. Good match. A little bit of weirdness at the end. Orton went for the RKO on Owens and actually looked like he was going down, but Owens didn't go down, and he shoved him into Sheamus. He took the RKO and got pinned, which also could set up Sheamus cashing in on Sunday because Randy Orton just pinned him right here as well. Cesaro also tried his flip bump into the ropes, but it got all fucked up, and Owens actually had to help him get over, which is very friendly of his opponent.
Yeah.
And he had a great comeback otherwise. I mean, Cesaro's great, and he also had a spot early where he held up Owens forever with a standing vertical suplex. Fun match.
Yeah, he did a hell of a crossbody, too.
That's right.
You know, that was like Ricky Steamboat style. Cesaro's so talented. And he's that guy's got some conditioning on him, too. I mean, the way he would, you know, when he runs in the corner and does those forearms and he just keeps doing them over and over, you know, it's like that guy's got some, you know, he's in great shape. He's a fantastic worker. You know, so.
I saw him do it on SmackDown. I think he did like, it's probably 6 or 8 back and forth. Just thinking, I don't know if all your opponents are going to be able to keep up with you, dude, but that's a cool spot.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And he's getting over. They passed around 500 of those signs.
That's right.
Know? I mean, that's the
dude,
thing.
There were way more in Seattle. Yeah. Or Everett, I apologize.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole thing is it's like it started in San Jose, but it's like it starts in one city, and like, you know, in every city now, somebody thinks it's their job to be doing this.
Great.
So I mean, that's the stuff that you know, that's the stuff that in theory, if I'm a promoter, I'm looking at this and going like, he's organically getting a following, and it's time to give him a big push. And
worked great for Zack Ryder.
He's very different from Zack Ryder.
He is very different.
I mean, I, you know, they did blow it with Zack Ryder in the sense that there was a cult thing and they could have done something with that. And they absolutely like, you know, they dug in their heels and it was just like, we're not doing nothing with him because we don't see anything in him. I mean, he had a limited ceiling. I mean, realistically, it's not like he was going to be the top guy in the promotion. I'm not saying Cesaro will, but Cesaro's ceiling is, you know, Cesaro can be like, if you have like a top 4 or 5 or 6, Cesaro can easily be one of those 6 and, you know, be in the top 2 when needed. If, you know, on the right occasion and at any time, he could easily be at the Rand, you know, what they see Randy Orton as. I don't even see much of the difference. He's got a good body. He's about the same height. I mean, he's not quite as heavy, but you know, he's much stronger. He's, probably a better worker. I mean, and you know, they're different kinds of workers. But he's going to have better matches more often than not than Randy Orton. And he's new, and I'd rather, you know, new is good. So, yeah, I'd like to see them. It's the time. Of course, we said that, you know,
like
a year and a half ago. Said it a year and a half ago. It was clear at the time, and they didn't do it then. And they are half-ass giving lip service to doing it at least now. And they may be doing it. We'll see.
Had a recap of the Undertaker-Brock deal, and then Undertaker did a promo backstage. He said, the Reaper is coming. Brock's name has been called. There is nothing he can do about it. And at SummerSlam, he will never rest in peace. Then they cut back to the announcers, and JBL had his flashcards. Cole said, this network, which you could pay $54.95 for SummerSlam, or you could buy the network and pay $9.99. And the new tagline is, it's no longer, it's just like Netflix, only better. Now, it's just like Netflix, just a better value.
Yeah. Well, it's their tagline.
Netflix is $2 cheaper. And I'm pretty sure has got significantly more.
Wouldn't it have like 10 times the amount of programming?
You would think so.
Maybe more. Maybe
I'm
more than 10 times.
I'm skeptical of this better value, but that's what they
said. Well, it's a better value if you're a wrestling fan. For me, WWE Network's a better value than Netflix. For an average American, it's not, but it's a tagline. I don't know. You may not want to be, you know, comparing yourself to Netflix for that very reason.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
So Seth is backstage with Hunter and Steph, and he's very happy that they're doing the contract signing tonight. And he says, I have just one request. At headquarters, there are statues of the legends like Bruno Sammartino and the Ultimate Warrior. If I win...
And Andre the Giant.
And Andre the Giant. If I win, and I bring back both titles, will you make a statue of myself there at the headquarters? And Hunter said, listen, if you go and you win both those belts, consider it done. And Seth was so happy. He ain't winning.
Could be a swerve. But yeah, you know what? It makes absolutely no sense for Seth Rollins to have the U.S. title. I'll just say that.
No, none.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, you know, could he escape and have the WWE title? Sure.
I think one way or the other, this is going to be a program. And if it's going to be a program, then the first match can have... In fact, Hell in a Cell is in October. So you could have a disputed finish in August, a disputed finish in September, and then you have to have a finish, allegedly, at Hell in a Cell in October.
Yeah. And perhaps by then, like, Cena could lose the U.S. title.
Sure.
Or something along those lines. Because, again, Seth Rollins holding the U.S. title just doesn't make sense. That's all. And they do. You know what? They do need to start setting something up for Hell in a Cell. You know, because when they just do the Hell in a Cell where they just throw something together at the last minute, it's usually not as effective.
Roman Reigns and Luke Harper with Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt at ringside. This was a rematch from SmackDown, which had no finish. Had a finish tonight. Roman won clean in the middle with a spear. Basically, exactly what happened on SmackDown happened here, except when he went for the spear, Bray Wyatt did not run in. Dean Ambrose was on commentary, and essentially he let Bray know, if you move, I'm going to kill you. And Bray never moved from his chair. The match went a long time. So long, in fact, that Dean Ambrose was repeating his lines from earlier on commentary. He just started looping around again. And yeah, it was... the fans weren't much into Roman's comeback. They did get into it in the last couple of minutes when they were kicking out of all their near falls and everything like that. And at least we got a clean finish. And Bray got in the ring afterwards and did the Follow the Buzzards deal. Didn't seem all that concerned with the loss, probably because he knew if you lose on Raw, you win on the pay-per-view. So he was fine. He's a smart guy.
Maybe he's one of those guys that was just told that it doesn't matter who wins and loses.
That's right, yeah. Doesn't matter. Tamina and Becky Lynch with the other girls at ringside.
You know why they have the other girls at ringside?
Do I know why?
Yeah.
Aside from they're having a match on Sunday?
No.
So they could all try to call spots for Tamina?
No. Because if the crowd gets down, they pound on the mat. I think it's brilliant.
Well, it sure as shit didn't work in the Nikki Bella match when they all gave up and started chanting for Brock.
I know, but they were there pounding.
They tried.
They were trying.
It didn't work.
Yeah, well, that one they probably didn't expect.
Now, maybe I'm out of my mind, Dave, but in this match,
yes,
they're talking about young Becky. And I'm not sure which of the dingbat commentators said this, but one of them said she had been the youngest wrestler in the history of Japan.
Man.
Now, what's funny is I thought the very first wrestler that just popped into my head, like of all of the female wrestlers in all of Japanese history, the very first one that popped into my head was just randomly Akira Hokuto. And sure as shit, she was younger than Becky Lynch when she started in Japan. The first one I thought of.
Many of them were.
Most of them. There was like an age limit, right?
Well, no, Becky Lynch went at 18.
Well, that's true. But at a certain time, they got rid of you, so everybody started young in All Japan Women.
A lot of women started. I don't know of anyone that ever, you know, I don't know of anyone that ever started at 14, but I know a lot that started at 15 that, you know, you would drop out of school in the 10th grade and you would go to the training school and in the days, the early days of that promotion of All Japan Women, you know, they would have hundreds and hundreds of girls come to the tryouts every year and they would, you know, have them lift weights and do push-ups and, you know, essentially what they do with the performance center, you know, when they do those camps. And the most athletic women out of all of them would be the ones who would be picked, and they would, you know, try to get them at 15, 16, 17 years old. And somehow they had this system where these women could work like crazy. I've seen some of those women at 18 years old that were phenomenal workers and 19 years old. And here, Akira Hokuto, I'm trying to think when I first saw her and she was great, but she was, I think she was still a teenager and she was already great. But Aja Kong, I think, started at 15, as Erika Shishido. So yeah, so you know what? And that would be, well, but she was sort of Japanese. I mean, she was half Japanese. But I could not think of a foreigner who was under 18. So she may have been the youngest foreigner. She absolutely was not the youngest woman wrestler ever in Japan. I mean, and not even close. But Rhonda Singh, I know, I think Rhonda Singh may have been champion by at the age of 19 there. So she may have started it. But even then, I don't think she went before she was 18. I think she graduated high school before she, you know, she went graduated high school and went to Mildred Burke and got booked to Japan because of her size. So she may have been, I mean, that part. But yeah, he, you know, I think there was something there and he said it wrong. And hopefully he won't keep saying it, but you know how that goes.
I know how that goes.
You know what, though? I just say this. I think that of all those new women, I think the one who may have the most potential to really be a star is Becky Lynch. I think she's got more charisma to me. So, I mean, Sasha Banks is an awesome worker. She wasn't tonight, but she usually is. And Charlotte's got the name... And she's the great athlete, but Becky Lynch has something. She's got a flair to her, which I didn't mean that word as a pun, but she's got a flair to her that no other woman on the roster has. I think, you know.
Listen, all I know is she got a decent match out of Tamina.
It was decent.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I didn't think it was great or anything. It was a short match, but it was all right. It was okay.
So yeah, she got the win with her disarmer. Fans did lose interest very quickly. And by Tamina standards, it was fine. Had Rusev and Mark Henry with Lana on commentary with her thick accent. Rusev won with the clutch. This actually was worse than the Tamina match, I think. And almost nothing good happened, except Henry did a few slams, and Lon added nothing to the match, and yeah.
You mean Summer, or do you mean Lon on commentary?
Lon on commentary.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of limited what she could say. I mean, it was over and over again about how Rusev still, you know, it's like for two people who hate each other, they sure can't stop.
They've got to be getting back together. I mean, they have to be.
Well, I mean, I'm sure
Vince has already given up on the big Lana push, and so on. If he's not doing that, I mean, Jesus, these two are much better together than they are apart.
Agreed. But if you do it too quick, you know what I mean?
Oh,
it's
yeah?
Like it'd be better to do it in like a year or so, year and a half. But, you know,
unfortunately,
I don't know that...
both of their partnerships are also sucking. I kind of like Hot Summer as Rusev's new Lana.
Yeah, but that's a short term.
It's a one note joke, and Dolph and Lana are just like
it doesn't work.
No chemistry.
It doesn't work. Doesn't work at all.
And I mean, by the way, he returned. Everybody, after the flag dropped, Lana got in the ring, took her shoes off. She wanted Summer, so Summer gets in the ring. Lana slaps her, and then she asked Rusev to get in the ring, and he got in, stared her down. And then Lana looked over his shoulder, and they hit Dolph's music, and he ran out, ran wild, went to super kick Rusev, but Rusev pulled Hot Summer in front of him, and that prevented the kick. But then Lana super kicked Summer, Dolph super kicked Rusev, both of the heels were sent packing, and then Dolph and Lana had the big smooch, and Dolph did this big promo afterwards saying, he was so happy to be back here, it's the greatest job in the world. The biggest SummerSlam of all time is coming, and so it needs one more match. He wanted a match with the Caveman Rusev, and they ended up making the match, so there you go. Add that to SummerSlam.
And he called Summer Rae Broomhilda.
Talk about a dated reference.
Is that... I guess it is, isn't it?
I don't think I've heard Broomhilda since I was about 5.
I can't even remember that. I mean, I know what it meant, because I was a cartoon strip, but God, I can't... I mean, I can't remember Broomhilda, you know, maybe since you were 5.
Maybe there's been a renaissance of the comics in the hard copy newspapers that everybody reads in the morning.
I don't know.
Undertaker and Brock package, and then we had Ryback versus Miz with Big Show on commentary. Big Show now a jolly happy giant as he talked about his movie.
Only for 2 minutes.
Yeah, It's Vendetta with Dean Cain out on DVD and Blu-ray tomorrow. I actually bet the Big Show is pretty good in this movie because he's not a bad actor, so we'll see. But Miz did this promo before the match saying Show should be embarrassed to call himself an actor just because he stood in front of a camera. All he's good for, he said, is blocking light and cleaning out catering. Both of which, probably true. Said they'd both be extras on Sunday, he'd be the star, Ryback beat him clean in the middle immediately, and then challenged Show to get in the ring, and Show, who had largely been a babyface on commentary, just walked out.
Yeah, so on the number of turns, is he up to like 54 now?
If you count those two as turns, he would literally be at about 38.
Okay.
Seth and Cena contract signing. Seth essentially did the same promo he did on SmackDown about how he's a once-in-a-lifetime athlete. Fans will be telling their grandchildren, I saw Seth Rollins. They're going to see history at the pay-per-view. He's going to get a statue. Signed the contract. Proceeded to rant for another 5 minutes about how Cena had been holding the company hostage for a decade. But to quote Bob Dylan, he said, who's local, the times they are a-changing. And the fans are doing a yes chant. He said John Cena's a disease. He is the cure. Finally, Cena came out. Got actually a very nominal pop, mostly fans singing the John Cena Sucks song. And he did this promo about how Seth should be worried about being himself and not being a low-rent John Cena. He's got a Never Stops Talking shirt, a You Can't See Me shirt.
Yeah, yeah, he's got those new John Cena shirts, yeah.
That's right, not very original, Cena noted. He said Hunter had the faith in Seth to give him the big push, make him the chosen one. He even gave him the pedigree to help build his own legacy. But he said Hunter had been trying to get rid of him for a decade, and he was going to crush his legacy because he was a 15-time champion. He had all this merchandise designed because he thought he would never get another shot at the title. But Seth had to open his big mouth.
I didn't believe him when he said that.
I didn't either, but that's the line. Said on Sunday he was going to do a number on Seth and Hunter. He was going to take Seth's title. He was going to beat Ric Flair's or tie Ric Flair's record, become a 16-time champion. Hunter's chosen one would become a footnote in history. The answer to the question, who was the man that John Cena beat to win the 16th world title? And he said that the one difference was Ric Flair and Hunter. In that relationship, Hunter was never Flair's bitch, but on Sunday, John said, I'm going to make you mine. Signed the contract, and away he went.
He was great.
Finally talked about that record. They finally figured out he's almost at 16.
I know. It's just weird. It's just weird to me because it's like that 16 is like one of those made-up numbers.
It is a made-up number, their made-up number, so that's the one they're going to use.
I know. Usually their made-up numbers are high, and this one, it's like it's low.
You can't all of a sudden, after all these years, go, you know, it was actually 22 title reigns that Ric Flair had. We were wrong all these years. We're going to change history. But yes.
No, we're not going to change history.
We're going to update it.
We're actually going to use history as opposed to making something up.
Very likely for them to do that at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, but not on the world titles for whatever reason. I think
maybe at WrestleMania this year they'll only draw 80,000, and they'll admit that WrestleMania 3 was only 78,000, so they did in fact break that record.
Yeah, they're announcing over 100,000 no matter what.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
New Day and the Matadors against Primetime Players and the Lucha Dragons. Kalisto pinned, I believe, Diego. It doesn't matter, as everybody else was distracted by Xavier Woods and Torito, who technically were on the same team in this 8-man, fighting outside. Torito gave him a face-first bump on the apron, ass-first dive off the apron as well. The rest of the match was just Titus throwing people around like a wild man, and it was short, not much to it. It was not offensive.
It was over before it ever started. By the way, the people loved
That's impossible. Just want to throw that out there.
Yes, it is technically impossible. Okay, anyway, the people loved the New Day, which is hilarious. I mean, it's not hilarious because they're really good, but
it's funny because I think the audience at first actually was chanting New Day rocks, and they had to pretend like they were chanting New Day sucks.
It was mixed. It was mixed. It was, but there absolutely were people chanting New Day rocks, yes.
Eclipse of Stardust and the Green Arrow, and then Barrett and Stardust did a promo, and Barrett has now been crowned the Cosmic King. It will surely help turn his career around.
Poor guy.
Got a new robe.
It wasn't even a robe. It was some chain deal.
It was a metal robe or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Nikki and Sasha, champion versus champion match.
It died.
For free on Raw with no build. It died.
It died, unfortunately. You know what? The other thing, too, even before it was dying, it wasn't very good.
No, it was. This was nowhere near an NXT match. It was every WWE Divas match they've ever done. It was structured the same way. It was a little bit better.
It was every bit an NXT match with Dana Brooke.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it was not. You know, I mean, as far as that went, but it was.
It was just a match. There was nothing to it. Fans got bored. They chanted for Lesnar.
Well, I mean, but even I would even say, because like if two guys had this match, because I was watching this thing going like, you know, I think, in the sense of it's really weird right now, because if two guys have a match the quality of a great women's match, people would just say it was a good match, you know. I mean, it's like when women, because I think this is the deal, because my mentality is from watching women's wrestling from you know, All Japan Women and everything, is that when women have like a great match, it's like as good as a great match for guys. But here, because women's matches have generally been so much worse than guy matches as a general rule for the last 100 years, that if it's anything approximately close, it's like this classic match. But I mean, this match here, if two guys had this match here, okay, and forget about the crowd turning on them. I mean, just the, you know, the mistimed spots and things like that, and just it not being good. I mean, people would really go, God, these guys sucked. But with this one, it was just kind of like, well, you know.
Well, this was better than Rusev and Mark Henry.
Well, we would say that match sucked too, wouldn't we?
That match did suck. That's the
okay,
point.
Okay.
But this one was better.
Yeah, absolutely was better than that. But it really, like, forget about the crowd. This was not a good match.
Well, let me tell you something that bothered me. This is a nitpick to end all nitpicks, but they cut backstage and PCB is watching on the monitor. But because it's WWE, every girl has their back to the monitor. So they're facing the camera, and they're all looking off screen to pretend like they're watching the match. Can't you just have them watch the television? I know we can't see their face, but every time I looked at it, it was funnier and funnier. It's like, no human being stands this way when they watch television. It's impossible. This has been blocked out by preschoolers in a video production class. It looks so stupid.
I tell you what, when they did their interview, those three, I mean, of all the interviews on the show,
it was very bad.
It was just, I mean, it was just like hitting me in the face how staged it felt.
Oh, yeah. They did the pinky swear. They did the Ric Flair woo. It was horrible.
Horrible, but it was just, it felt very, very contrived. You know,
well,
more
I consider
than,
that horrible.
Yeah. You know what? I just thought of something. I didn't actually think of this.
By the way, before you think about it, Sasha won everybody with the bank statement. Nikki was going for the rack attack.
Which is cool, because they did put the NXT champion over the Divas champion. And
with a distraction from Naomi.
Right. So, I mean, they are putting, I mean, us very consistently. I mean, there was that exception in that one tag, which may not have even been the right finish anyway. But, they've been very consistent about putting the new girls over, which, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. You know, like a lot of times when they bring people up and everything, it's like they really don't try to get them over. I mean, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but it's usually they don't have a very good battle plan. With this one, I'm not saying they have necessarily a good battle plan, but they absolutely want to get these women over. I mean,
sure.
They really want to do it bad. Whether it happens, I mean, it's a struggle, and I think that they made some mistakes from the very beginning. And one of them, I think this match proved, is that as good as Sasha Banks is, and she is, you know, because I've seen her in too many good matches to not know that she's really good and poised and everything, you cannot have those kind of classic matches. You know, it's funny, too, because, you know, how people, oh, Nikki Bella, she's not really as bad as, like, she's not really that bad, or, you know, she's improved so much, and she's improved. I mean, without a doubt, she's improved. But I think this match also tells you about how not great she is in the sense of, and granted, I know they don't have the practice time, and there's other things to it as well. But if
no one else on this show had the practice time,
okay. However, okay, if you had put Natalya in the ring with Sasha Banks with no hey, look, Natalya, remember Natalya and Charlotte? They had no practice time. That was just freaking them going in there and them working out a match and them doing a match. And granted, you know, they had, you know, Rick and Brett there, which helped from an emotional standpoint. But even if they weren't there, those two had a really hell of a great match. So it can be done without, like, endless practice, okay? I believe if Sasha Banks was in there with Natalya, the people still may have turned on the match, but technically it would have been a much, much better match.
So you're concluding that Natalya is better than Nikki Bella?
I'm concluding that...
Because that's a good conclusion.
Okay, well, I think that's very, yeah. But I think that the thing is that as much as, you know, there's people who want to say, oh, they're really not, like, they're really not that bad. They're really not that good. You know, the existing divas. I mean, there really isn't, you know, I guess Natalya being, you know, we never see. But I mean, if you look at the rest of them, I mean, I'm not saying that they're bad, but they're not that good because they're not this woman here, Sasha Banks, who, I mean, I see, you know, who's killed it over and over and over again. Didn't even get an average match in this match out of Nikki Bella. I mean, if it was like a little bit above average, like, oh, that's, you know, that's about what I expect. This was, you know, much worse than I expected. I don't want to rave on it anymore, but it died. It wasn't their fault, you know, because they were put in a bad position. But, you know, I mean, it was the second weakest match on the show as well.
So we had Brock's homecoming. Paul came out and introduced him, and he got a huge ovation, ticker tape and confetti falling from the ceiling. Place is going nuts. Heyman dropped to his knees, sang the battle hymn of the Republic for Brock Lesnar.
Oh, my God.
Brock was just having the time of his life. And Undertaker's dong sounded, and they were briefly scared, but nothing happened, so Paul got all cocky. He's doing this promo about how these Jedi mind tricks are not going to help you. You could team with the God and the Devil, and Brock's going to take out all of them. He said that Undertaker had been obsessed with Brock ever since the ref's hand hit the mat for the third time at Mania. He had never beaten Brock. He never had. He never will. He was going to know that on Sunday. He was going to know there was nothing he could do about it. He wasn't facing a man. He was facing a beast. And Brock was going to have no respect for any of his championships, his 25 years, nothing. He was just going to beat him on Sunday. And as he's ranting, the lights went out, came back on, and Undertaker was in the ring. Gave Brock a low blow, chokeslam, tombstone, left him laying. Fans were not happy with this, as you can imagine. And Undertaker did his pose, walked backstage. And after the show went off the air, Brock did get to his feet and actually got to a knee. And he cut a promo about how, that was a good one, Undertaker, but come Sunday, you're going to take your last ride too. And he held up the mic, and everybody goes, Suplex City! And they were all happy, and he went backstage. So, that was Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a letdown main event segment.
Oh, I didn't think so. I mean, I mean, as far as the physical interaction, wouldn't have been... But, it, you know what? I wouldn't have done it that way, but when they were doing it, it was like, well, that is what they do. That is their rule.
But sometimes you got to do something different.
We beat up the guy in his home city. But the promo aspect of it, that was tremendous. I thought that Paul was really on that singing.
Paul's always on.
This is better than most. This was really one of his top tier promos, I thought.
He's very, very good, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sometimes the best thing is to be hurt because then you're Daniel Bryan in your hometown and you don't get beat up.
Or calling sick.
That's right. That was a great benefit to him to be unable to take any moves.
That's right.
So tell us about...
You know what? If he could, they would have beaten him up for sure.
Well, that is true. They would have left him laying and called him a cripple again like they did on this show here.
Yeah.
They still got that in. So the full SummerSlam card, for those of you wondering, it is a 4-hour show, 10 matches announced for the show.
Plus, we'll probably get a pre-show match, too, that they haven't announced yet.
Yep, or they could bump one of these. But we got Ziggler versus Rusev. We've got the Bella Twins and Alicia Fox against Naomi, Sasha, and Tamina against Paige, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch. Elimination match, which...
So that's like... Is that like an eight-fall match?
I think that one full team has to be eliminated. No, two full teams.
So, but are you eliminated... by individual pins, or if you
I don't
lose,
know.
Do all three ditch the?
I don't
that.
Know, but all I know is, do we really need an elimination match to make sure all of these women get beaten?
Well, I mean, that's my thing. If it only one member of the team has to lose, you can just pin Tamina, and that's fine, and they're gone. Or you can pin, you know, whoever you want, you know, Alicia or Nikki or Brie or whatever, and that's fine, because I'm figuring that the Charlotte team should win, because they're the ones that are being pushed right now, and plus Nikki's the champ, and the whole thing out of this is that somebody, we've had Sasha beat the champ, we've had Charlotte beat the champ, so one of those two, theoretically, should be getting a title shot on the September pay-per-view, and they should probably somehow eliminate Nikki in this match to set that up. So one of the other, so yeah, either the team bad or the team PCB, PCB, right?
The stupid names.
I know. One of those teams should win. So yeah, but if they gotta beat eight people and they're gonna have a 10-minute match, it's like, that's a very bad idea, because, you know, when they do that, you know, we've seen those matches. Those matches are never good.
All right. Listen, I'm on WWE.com here.
Oh, they're going to tell us?
Well, let's see. There's a match preview here for this tag here. Let's see. The three stables will compete at SummerSlam to see who can lay claim to the distinction of deities of the Divas Revolution. The action will be nonstop and unpredictable.
When that's nice.
Only one team member needs to be pinned to eliminate the entire team.
Okay, so then we're going to...
So that's better.
So we're going to have a three-fall match.
That's right. Would be nice if they explained that on television. Maybe we missed it, but... So anyway, we got that match there, the elimination match with the women. We've also got Kevin Owens versus Cesaro.
Okay, so did you notice, that sign in the stands for Kevin Owens early in the show, right?
That sign?
The one that says, like, I think it was fat Owens fat or something? Or eat Owens eat?
I didn't see it, but I...
Okay. They sure focused on that sign for a long time. So anyway, after last week, I know whose job it is to call the shots. I'm just saying. So all those people who, like, had that thing that I said... I'm kind of half-ass saying it right now that I never said before, but they focused on that sign.
The camera focusing would in fact be a certain individual's job.
Yes, that would be Kevin Dunn.
Not Kevin Dunn. I don't think that instructed Randy Orton to make a fat.
No. It absolutely wasn't. No, you know, it wasn't. It wasn't. No,
but the camera focusing would be Kevin Dunn.
Yeah. So now we're gonna have another. So we can get him trending on Twitter again. This week.
Like it matters. Like it's going to have any impact on his job whatsoever.
But no, I know. No. Well,
he's cashing $1 million in stock. He doesn't give a shit about Twitter.
He still may.
If he does, he's got big problems.
I know plenty of people who are making a lot of money that care about Twitter. Way more than they
maybe
should.
Maybe cashing $1 million so he could buy 500 million followers on Twitter. Wouldn't that be quite the swerve?
Oh, God.
Anyway, Stephen Amell and Neville against Stardust and King Barrett.
People actually do that.
Oh, I know. That's why I mentioned it.
Yeah.
The Primetime Players against the Matadors, Lucha Dragons, and the New Day for the tag team titles. Hopefully the New Day wins that.
Yeah, the New Day should win this one this time. They really should. Yeah.
Bray and Luke Harper against Ambrose and Roman Reigns. Mm. Got the three-way Ryback, Miz, and The Big Show. Cena versus Seth. Orton versus Sheamus.
I gotta say, for that three-way, if they put Miz over, and they may, God, talk about building a guy up to make him a viable champion.
Oh yeah. Cena, Seth, Randy Orton, Sheamus, and Lesnar versus The Undertaker. So there you go. That's your lineup.
Lesnar Undertaker is gonna be really interesting because the crowd will probably be super into it, but I'm wondering how much they, you know, I know Undertaker was knocked out very early in the first match, but it wasn't very good at all.
Yeah, it wasn't very good, but you know what? That was the first bad match he'd had after a string of having the best match at Mania about 5 years in a row. So unless he's completely fallen off the cliff, they can have a decent smoke and mirrors main event.
He didn't have, I mean, he had an okay match with Bray Wyatt, but it was nothing special.
It was nothing special, but... I think that they're going to be okay in the main event position. We'll see. I could be out of my mind.
But I mean, the point is that Lesnar has great matches, but a great Lesnar match is probably not the kind of match that you'd want Undertaker in. I mean, is he really going to give him 13 suplexes? I guess he could, but that's, you know what I mean? And just get him in the corner and throw those hard knees and beat the shit out of him. I mean, you know, Undertaker may be going back to the hospital if they do that one.
Well, I guess we'll see on Sunday. Tell us about Dave Brown.
Freaking Dave Brown, what a nice guy. Dave Brown is retiring as the meteorologist at Channel 5 in Memphis after a long broadcast career that started in 1964. And, of course, he's a legendary pro wrestling announcer, one of the best. Did it for 35 years, roughly. As a pro wrestling announcer in the Memphis area. I mean, the most popular newsman was the pro wrestling announcer at the same time. And he noted today, in fact, in an article in the Memphis Commercial Appeal, that you could never do that today. It could not, it would not happen, it could not happen. But somehow, in his case, it happened, which is largely due to Lance Russell. And because Lance Russell was program director who hired Dave Brown to be his sidekick. He had been doing local radio as a wrestling announcer, and then he got him to do the Dialing for Dollars movie, and then he had him doing afternoon weather, and then he became the primetime weatherman, and he became the most popular news personality in that in Memphis for decades. And he was Dave Brown was like, you know, I mean, Lance Russell and Dave Brown, to me, were the greatest announcing pair that there's ever been, because they could go in there and you could have the absolute worst angle in the world. And my God, when they did weekly TV, I mean, they had some good ones, no doubt, but they had some of, you know, they were very creative in Memphis, which was good and bad. And they had some of the worst angles in the world. And somehow those two guys would make the dumbest thing seem like it's kind of, you know, almost real. I mean, they had so much credibility with their audience. And I think part of it is because they were such nice guys in real life. And, you know, they were, you know, like nobody turned them heel. I'll bet you in that whole time Dave was announcing, I'll bet you never took a bump. I'll bet you they never even dreamed of doing it. I can't remember anything that they ever did with him. Lance, I remember that Jimmy Hart once poured powder all over his hair, which actually was pretty funny. And I think that he may have done, I'm trying to think if he ever, I don't remember Lance ever getting beat up. It's possible he may have done it once for like a real killer angle, but I sure don't remember it. And Dave, you know, I don't think Dave would have done it anyway because of, you know, his standing in the community and everything. But I just thought those guys were the best. Well, like I said, you know, I've talked to Dave on several occasions, and what a great guy. And, you know, I know he had been talking about retiring for 3 years, and so got a lot of press out in Memphis.
So for various reasons, you watched last two nights of G1 again, and you've got some...
I really haven't been sleeping. I tell you what, that show we did, okay... You know, I think maybe it would have been better for us to have done that show in the morning.
Well, your idea.
God. I know it was my idea.
I would have loved to have done it in the morning.
Okay, maybe next time Tokyo Dome or something, we'll do it in the morning. But, yeah, I mean, when we did the Tokyo Dome, even though we hadn't slept at all, that was like a pretty good show. But the show we did the other night, oh, my God. Anyway. So
actually, wasn't a bad show, given the fact that we did it at 3 o'clock in the morning. We screwed up a couple of...
I screwed up the girl. The girl was the different girl.
I warned you about the girl.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I had done some research.
Okay, and I had just listened to the announcers in Japanese, and I guess that I don't even know what they were saying. Maybe they were saying it's not her, but I just heard the name.
I think they were saying it was Meow Chow. She was
really
dressed like a cat.
Maybe. I don't know. She was dressed like Catwoman. But anyway, so I watched. Okay, so those were good shows. The Bucks match was so much better the second time I watched it than the first time, because the first time I watched it, I think it was like this thing of, God, it's, you know, the crowd's not making that much noise. The second time I watched it to like kind of watch it like as a wrestling match, it was, God, it was so good. I mean, Kyle O'Reilly, God, that guy in Fish, those guys are so good. What a great team. So anyway, that match was much better the second time. And everything else was pretty much about the same. That was a fantastic main event. Both of those, the Okada-Nakamura match, that was, the finish of that match was so great. And then it played into the next night, you know, when he did the armbar and the triangle and everything on Tanahashi right before the finish. So the selling, my God, these guys, I you know, these guys may be some of the best guys that I've ever seen. I mean, really? I mean, when I was done watching and seeing like Tanahashi and AJ and Okada and Nakamura and then Nakamura and Tanahashi in three straight nights, it's like, man, I mean, I don't know that I've seen, you know, guys have matches really that good. Like, you know, I mean, over and over. I mean, I mean, you know, yeah, Misawa and those guys and Kobashi. And I'm still thinking that Kobashi's still, it's harder for me to say it, but I still think Kobashi's like a level above these guys. But man, they're getting close. They're getting, you know, these guys are, I mean, all of them, all four of them, AJ too. These guys are so great. Tanahashi said that he wanted to face the guys who beat him. And it seemed like they've set up Nakamura, Goto, and AJ for Okada. You know, I don't think that all three will get a shot, but I think maybe one or two of them will get a shot. One, you know, I think AJ for sure gets a shot either in September or October at Okada's title by, because of that pin. And yeah, Tanahashi's gonna, I think they made the big announcement that Tanahashi's headlining the Tokyo Dome for the, whatever year, I don't even know what it is. It's probably like the fifth or sixth straight year. I guess they just feel that they got to do it. I mean, I wanted Nakamura and Okada, but my God, that the impact that Tanahashi had on with those girls and everything. I mean, that was really something to see with the girls crying and everything. That's just not something that you see very often in wrestling, let alone two times in three nights.
It's something else.
Yep.
He is something else. We got some new UFC matches announced. What are they?
Jacare Souza, I always mispronounce it, Jacare Souza and Yoel Romero are going to be fighting on the December 12th show, which is the same show as McGregor and Aldo and Weidman and Rockhold. So that just loads that show up even more. That's going to, you know, I mean, again, someone may get hurt, but the good thing about it, and you know, I did say before that I really hope that they put Romero and Souza on the same show with Rockhold and Weidman, because if somebody gets hurt, Rockhold or Weidman, they've got, you know, it could be one or the other. They got a contender right there. So I think that's really good booking. And even if nobody gets hurt, you got the natural thing where you're watching this show, and when the show is over, you're going to go, like to me, like the best thing you can have on a show is you're watching a show and then the show is over and you go, you know what? That show was good. And I can't wait to see this guy fight this guy. And when you have them both on the same show, you know, and against really top guys, whoever wins those two fights, people are going to go, yeah, those were, you know, whether the fights are good or bad, they're going to go like, well, we've got a natural question on who's number one between those two guys who won those two fights. And so that's your next championship fight. So I always think that they should be, as much as possible, do number one contender fights. If they can do it on the same show, sometimes that's not possible because you've got so many masters to fill. But if that's the case, maybe do them like a week apart, because I just think that you want them on the same working cycle. So you know, they'll be ready for their next fight, hopefully at a similar time. And you want the fans to, you know, come up with the match themselves that they really want to see, and then that's the match that you give to them, as opposed to having to convince them to watch a match that they really don't care about, and then you got to sell it on them, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't.
All right, let's do some mailbag here. We've got plenty of questions. This person here says, did Tyson Kidd's neck injury cause Triple H to get cold feet on Samoa Joe, or is Joe just running the treadmill with the expectation of getting slotted in more important matches this fall? I highly doubt anybody would have predicted when he debuted 3 months ago that his first supercard match in New York City would be against Baron Corbin.
Yeah, you know what? I wouldn't have predicted that.
I definitely would not have.
Yeah. I have not heard of him getting any heat, and the key is, and this is why I say that I don't think he did, because if he had heat, they would switch his finisher, and they didn't do that.
That's right.
But I'm not. I do think that they're not sold on him. I've always thought that, because just the way everything went, it's like, you know, when you sign a guy and you kind of decide that he's not going to be on the main roster and he's 37, 38 years old, whatever Joe is right now, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like you either go with it or you don't. And I think that they like are kind of like put their toe in the pool. They're not sure. And that's never good when you hire someone and you're not sure. So, yeah, I don't think that the Tyson Kidd thing has anything to do with it, because if it did, you know, I mean, it, you know, he'd have a different he'd just use the choke and he wouldn't be doing that muscle buster.
Lou here says, any news on what Ring of Honor has lined up for its tour of Japan? Do they plan on using New Japan wrestlers on the shows?
Yes, there will be New Japan wrestlers on the shows, most likely. I mean, it's going to be similar to Fantastica Mania, where the Ring of Honor guys will probably be the spotlight, but they'll work tags with the Japanese guys, and the Japanese guys will let them do their thing. Because that's what happens with the CML shows. I really like this. Another thing to say really good about the Japanese guys is, when they go and work those shows, I mean, like, you know, you got Okada and Tanahashi and these guys who are like, you know, as good as anyone in the business. And they'll go work those lucha shows and they'll stand back and they'll let those guys have the spotlight and they'll, you know, augment it, but they won't steal it from them. You know, a lot of people would get very jealous and you know what I mean? Like, we're the superstars and they're not as good as us because, you know, we're better wrestlers than they are and we're real superstars and they're luchadors or something. I've seen that happen, WCW. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess it's different in a sense but because it was never supposed to be a lucha promotion, but still, it was very completely different attitude. And I think that it'd be the same thing with Ring of Honor. You know, it'll probably be a very similar situation.
Craig here, it's not really a question, but I'm glad he brought it up because it's driving me crazy too. Why do Hunter, Steph, and Cole continually promote that SummerSlam is available exclusively on the WWE Network, and then they have JBL hold up signs about how you can buy it on traditional pay-per-view literally minutes later? No, they do say exclusively on the WWE Network. They said it on SmackDown. They said it on Raw.
Yes, you're right. You're right. You're
right.
Drives
me nuts.
I have heard that. You're right. You're right. They do say that. Yeah, I think they don't know what exclusively means.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
Will the NXT crew working...
It's exclusively streaming. Unless you're pirating.
Hey, well, that's not exclusive then.
Yeah.
Will the NXT crew working in Brooklyn get paid a percentage of the gate, like the WWE wrestlers, or do they get salaries regardless of any gate?
No, they get... I do not know, and I will actually check on that. But I would be 95% sure that they get paid, you know, because that's a big house. I mean, I don't know what the number is, but it's. I'll tell you what, it's probably, you know, close. I don't know if it's quite seven figures, but you know, it's going to be it. When they did San Jose, it was $200,000, and I think this is scaled higher, and it's obviously, you know, it's 13,500 people or 13,400 people, and San Jose was 4,700 paid. So that's.
Can you imagine if I realize this is WWE?
It's almost close to triple. So the gate, you know, with higher prices, that gate may be like $700,000.
Can you imagine if they did $1 million for an NXT show when, in its entire history, the peak of the Monday Night Wars, WCW never did $1 million gate?
Oh yeah, boy, that one time when they did their record, which was in the nines. I remember frickin' Eric was mad at Zane Bresloff. How do we not do $1 million?
So how dare you?
How dare you do 900 and whatever it was, $916,000.
Like 937 or something, I don't remember.
Yeah, whatever it was, whatever the 900 number was, yeah. Yeah, there was somebody else that happened. I think that happened once in another promotion, too, where they did something like that. You know, no, I know what it was. That was Jim Herd with Ric Flair when they got that Sunday main event number up to like a 4.4. It's like, I want a 5. It's like, can't you thank me one day for at least a day, you know, before like yelling at him for setting not a record, but it was the highest in years.
The NBA released its 2015-16 schedule a few days ago. It turns out the Celtics will visit the Magic in Orlando Sunday, January 31st. Right now, the Rumble is scheduled in Orlando on January 24th.
Yeah, it's going against the NBA. I mean, the NBA. It's going against the NFL playoffs. Yeah, bad scheduling. But you know what? I don't think it matters. I mean, if this was exclusively on pay-per-view, I think that they would have to change the date. Because I could not imagine going against the... Because they'd be going head-to-head with the NFC Championship game. And I just wouldn't want to do that. But on the network, I just don't think it's anywhere near as big a thing because people who are going to watch it are going to watch it anyway. They're going to buy the thing anyway, and they'll just watch it. If they want to watch football, they'll watch the Royal Rumble after the football. I mean, because it's something that they're already subscribed to anyway. But if it's $54.95 and it's a day of sale, and you're going like, I can watch the football for free, or I can watch the Royal Rumble for $54.95, you're gonna lose, 5-10%. I mean, you're gonna take a hit. There's no doubt about it. If they had done that on regular, so, but yeah, I would switch the day, but I don't know that it's again. Yeah, they can't switch it to because the day to switch it usually historically the Rumble goes on the Sunday between the playoffs and the Super Bowl. There's usually that week off. So that week off would be January 31st, and I have no idea why they didn't book it for January 31st. But it's going to be difficult. I mean, it is possible. I mean, UFC may have gotten the minor league hockey team to switch dates in Calgary if there is going to be a December 5th show. But it's different, I mean, yeah, you know what? I mean, it's one thing when it's UFC that did a $4 million gate the last time in. It's another thing when you're coming in and doing, let's say a $1 million gate for a Royal Rumble when the basketball team is probably going to come in and do way over that for a home game. So it's not like the basketball team, which is your primary tenant, is going to – I mean, it's possible they'll move, but, it's – I wouldn't want to gamble on the idea that the NBA team's going to move because WWE wants to do a pay-per-view on January 31st. So –
Dave said that the AAA broadcast decided to go with a cheaper company to help with the audio. Had Jeff Jarrett presented Triple Mania, would it have been his responsibility to deal with the audio? How did that work when he presented New Japan Wrestle Kingdom earlier this year?
I don't know, but I don't think that, they...
Dude, it was those guys went to Japan, so I'm sure New Japan just set up two extra mics and a table.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened, and they didn't because they didn't have any communication with the truck. They had their problems too. They didn't know when they were on the air.
That's right. Yeah.
Because there were times where they were talking and they didn't know what was going on. Like they had to watch that thing to figure out when to go in and out, and it wasn't like somebody was giving them a countdown. So that was
they probably had someone giving them a countdown, but it was probably in Japanese.
No one was giving them a countdown. Listen. You could learn. If they gave a countdown in Japanese, I don't know about Jim Ross learning. A countdown. But Stryker would pick it up in a heartbeat, and Jim Ross probably, if he really wanted to, would pick it up in a heartbeat. It's not that difficult. In the Mexico thing, like nobody knew what the hell was going on. But it would have been whether it had been Jeff Jarrett or anyone else, that show was going to be a disaster. They've had so many problems. I got to say this. I mean, when it comes to AAA, I mean, it's like, because I've watched most of their pay-per-views, and there have been smooth shows, but there have been, it's almost to the point when it comes to AAA where I don't even want to watch them live because I know there's going to be all kinds of problems, and I'll just, wait a day or two until they fix them. And even like which was the one? What was the last one? Verano de Scandolo? The World Cup actually, I mean, I didn't see the World Cup live. I watched it afterwards, and the World Cup was actually pretty much no problem at all. But the Verano de Scandolo show, that one, as I remember, was a mess live. And then on the replay, it was still a mess. And then I watched clean most of the show, pretty much the whole show, clean, no problem, about a week. No, I mean, maybe a couple days later. And then a week later, I wanted to rewatch a match, and it was a total mess. So, I don't know what to say. AAA, they got their problems when it comes to the delivery of the show. That's something they need to work on and fast.
Has Vince put his hair down on hair dye? It seems that Dolph Ziggler and Seth Rollins have not re-dyed their hair blonde.
Do not know. Have not heard anything. Probably not, because I haven't heard anything. And, yeah, maybe, who knows? I don't know if it's the guys or some, you know, sometimes it's the company orders them. They're definitely control freaks when it comes to that.
Is there any chance New Japan is going to offer Wrestle Kingdom on pay-per-view in the U.S. and have Mauro Ranallo and Josh Barnett call the show?
I think there's a good chance, because it was a profitable venture, that Jeff Jarrett will try to get it done again. If not, I think that there's a decent chance that Ring of Honor will try to pick it up, because, again, it did better than Ring of Honor pay-per-views. So I think that there's a pretty good chance. Here's the negative on it. It's going to be on a Sunday night. So like the one last year when it was on Saturday night or early Sunday morning, you could replay it at 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, that traditional, or 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock our time, the traditional time slot for pay-per-view. This one, it will not make it for that. So if you're going to do a replay, it's going to be Monday night. And I wouldn't want to do a pay-per-view on Monday night, a pro wrestling pay-per-view. Just think it's a bad idea, horrible idea. Sunday's a work night, so I mean, like, I may stay up till 4 a.m. or so, but if you got to work at 8, you know, it's not highly recommended. So there's a lot going against it this year from doing the kind of business last year's did. Nevertheless, there's enough people who are going to want to see it and just say screw it. The last year's show was fantastic. This year, so odds are will be fantastic again. So yeah, there's no deal in place, but there's people who are interested in deals. So I wouldn't be surprised. And as far as who calls it, could be, you know, Mauro Ranallo and Josh Barnett could. It's possible. Depends on, you know, again, you know, you could, you know, another thing. I hadn't even thought about this, but here's another idea. What about, well, they won't do it because it'll be undercutting their network. So that's not going to happen. I was thinking, you know, because a lot of the New Year's Eve shows aired live on Access, not even on pay-per-view. Michael Chiavello did a lot of the announcing. So I was, you know, Chiavello's a really good wrestling announcer as well. He did great on the Lucha Underground show. He works for Access. You know, Mauro obviously would do an incredible job. Jim Ross could do a great job. There's a lot of people who could. Tanae will be probably, you know, now I'm going to jinx it. But it's Mike Tanae's contract will be up by then. And God only knows, you know, I mean, I just, you know, I mean, he, you know, he may be rehired. Who the hell knows? But it's like, you know, it's TNA. And I mean, there's, you know, I mean, James Storm's gone. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, James Storm was a guy I didn't think was ever going to leave. There's plenty of people who can announce that show. That's the least of the problems, but the day is the problem, you know, that Monday thing.
All right, everybody, on that note, we're going to wrap it up. We've got a lot of stuff up on the front page. Tons of shows up there. We have the new back issue of The Observer. The new Observer is going to be up in the next couple of days. Got a lot of shows coming up over the next few days as well, so check out the front page, everybody, WrestlingObserver.com. We'll talk to you again after a while.